Hi there, House Culture listener. If you enjoy this episode or have enjoyed listening to other episodes in our series, please support and donate to us through the Acast supporter feature. All donations will help us create the content that you love listening to. You can decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. So it could be a one-off and every now and then or once every time you listen. It's up to you. Click on the supporter link that you can find in the episode or show description, and with Google or Apple Pay, it will take you less than 30 seconds to make your payment.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey guys, I'm Andrea Oliva, and you're listening to the House Culture Podcast.
House Culture.
Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode in the third season of the House Culture Podcast, hosted by me, the managing editor at House Culture, Matt Rouse. I hope that you are safe and well wherever you are listening in the world right now. I also hope that you might have even been lucky enough to get out there and party over the past few weeks. It's certainly a good feeling getting back on the dance floor, and if you haven't quite been able to yet, stay strong. Your time will come. If you're a regular listener, thanks for tuning in. If it's your first time here, welcome. We are House Culture, a collective of house music fans who have come together through their mutual love of the beat to celebrate the spirit of house music. If you prefer your dose of the dance floor in daily portions, then come on over to our Instagram at houseculturenet, where you can soak up the vibes and connect with other beat lovers from across the globe. Now, right here on the monthly podcast, we chat to icons of the scene who all have a fascinating story to tell. I'm talking about people like Fatboy Slim, David Morales, Danny Tenaglia, and Harry Romero, as well as leaders of the new school of talent such as Alan Fitzpatrick, Josh Butler, Sidney Charles, and the Picard Brothers. So make sure you dig through our back catalogue of episodes if you haven't done so already. Now, let's get on with this one, shall we? In this episode, we talk to an artist and DJ who has presided over one of the biggest parties in Ibiza for nearly a decade, in Ansar Ashwaya. He's played all over the world alongside the biggest names in the game. He has also recently launched his own All I Need empire, which includes music, fashion and events. I am, of course, talking about Andrea Oliva. In our conversation, you'll hear Andrea talk about his own sound.
You always need to have like a certain trademark in your sound. Mine, I would define it as always having a certain groove. But, you know, like it's a constant evolution.
What he tries to achieve is iconic Ants residency at Ashwaya in Ibiza.
You know what's working at Ushuaia. Sometimes I throw in some all-time classics and they love it, and I give them a moment to go back where they come from and tell their friends, oh, and then he played Knights of the Jaguar and the place was freaking out, and they have people telling me, oh, I was in Ushuaia 10, 9, 8 years ago and you played that track. It really changed my life.
And how he approaches his DJ life with a humble attitude and an appreciation of the scene.
That's why I'm seeing all of this pretty relaxed. I'm just thankful and I appreciate every second I can be in the house culture world, and I try to make the best out of it and enjoy it.
This one was recorded live and direct from his base in Ibiza. I hope you enjoy it. This is Andrea Oliva.
House Culture.
Hi, Andrea. Thank you so much for finding the time to sit down with us in your hectic schedule. on the House Culture podcast today. You're a DJ, producer, Lord of the Underground, and King of Ants in Ibiza. You've also got an extremely exciting project on the horizon called All I Need. But before we get stuck into all of that, we want to start at the beginning of your journey and find out, when you were growing up in Switzerland, what kind of music were you into, and how did you first discover house music and electronic beats?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Yeah, looking back, I was, and I still am, totally into different kind of music. So if it's funk, all of this, like indie bands, electronica, house, techno, I hip-hop, I really find in all kind of music something which touches me, you know. I think music is something which gives you certain emotions, and that's why I created my brand All I Need, because for me personally, all I need is music, basically, you know. And I don't need techno all the time, so, you know, I listen to chill out, and it depends on the mood. Mm-hmm. You know? So growing up, I was listening to Wu-Tang, Nas, A Tribe Called Quest, Nirvana. And then I was like 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And my uncle back then, he used to produce a trance and ambient sound. And every Sunday when I went to see my grandparents with my parents, he would take me to his studio. And, you know, I would see him producing this kind of music, which totally blew my mind because, you know, it was everything so new, mm-hmm. the melodies, the synthesizers, then the banging beats. And this is how I got into electronic music, through my uncle. Okay. Bless him.
And you say that was, how old were you then? Like you said, about 12 or 13?
12 or 13. Ah. And then back in the village, and by the way, I still live there. It's a place called Merlin next to Basel, Switzerland. Very small village, like it's me and 8,000 cows living there. Yeah, no, it's beautiful. And two of my older friends, they were DJing back then. And there was like a youth center where all the kids were hanging out once a week. And they had turntables and they were mixing records. And this is how it started with my DJ obsession. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole art of DJing was like as fascinating as the music itself. Mm-hmm. And then they learned me how to, you know, how to pitch the records, how to mix. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I was watching a lot of videos of Carl Cox back then. And Sven Veth, and mm-hmm. there was a guy who did the live back then. His name was Cosmic Baby.
Yeah.
And since then, I lost my mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, to take that inspiration. And then I suppose it was like, okay, I've got to get some decks and start practicing myself. And did that at any stage at that point, was it just a hobby? Or was it like, no, this is what I want my life to be?
You know what? For me, when I learned the art of DJing, turntables and the mixer was the same like my friends back then were learning to play guitar. So I pretty much saw the whole setup, the whole equipment to DJ more as an instrument. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, I was more focused on learning the craft, you know, learning the technique and everything. And same as you learn an instrument. And because if you like guitars or basses or whatever, or drums, you don't want to become the next Jimi Hendrix. You just want to learn how to play. Uh-huh. You don't want to make a career out of it. You just want to play, maybe for meditation reasons, maybe just to turn off your struggle during the day and just play music. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know, you know, you can make a career out of it or something.
Yeah.
It was literally just learning how to mix and creating a certain vibe when you mix two records together.
Yeah.
But the goal was never to become like an international touring DJ and producer and all of that.
No, I mean, from humble beginnings, it's, you know, it's amazing. You can, you know, you've made a life out of that. passion to begin with. And, you know, you mentioned it was down at the youth club. So I suppose that you weren't even old enough to get into a club or anything like that. Was there ever a moment where you were getting gigs or getting so talented that you were getting gigs that you might have been playing in clubs before you're even legally old enough to get in there? How did that work?
So many stories on on that topic. I was super young, mm-hmm. and I remember my mom told my older friends, okay, he can come and practice with you, but at 8 p.m. he has to be at home. 7 p.m. he has to be at home. They would pick me up. I would go to the youth club, and we would practice, and then they would drive me home. And first gigs, I remember like one of my friend Michel, the one of the two DJs who learned me everything, like would teach me everything. He was hiding underneath the DJ booth. That was my first gig. And we had like two headphones. He had a headphone, I had a headphone, and he would give me signs from underneath the booth. I was looking down, and he was like, okay, now you can mix, now it fits, now the pitch is correct, like, now you can mix, okay, go. You know, like, it was very funny. And I was like maybe 13.
Wow.
And I was resident in a club. I was like 14, 15, and the club was like 21.
Yeah.
You know, get in. And but my parents, you know, I would go play the intro and then I would go home.
Mm-hmm.
And they would see, they always supported me like crazy. And of course, at one stage of my journey, they were like, okay, you really, we're going to support this, but you know, school, and you have to learn a job and mm-hmm. all proper things. They were really open-minded. Mm-hmm. So my first gigs, I was resident at a club called Terminus in Switzerland, which was quite, was one of the best clubs back then. And I played before Tony Humphries mm-hmm. and David Morales and all of those guys. And,
yeah.
You know, I was like 14, 15.
That's incredible.
Yeah, funny.
I mean, and I suppose it's that ignorance of youth as well. Was that wasn't necessarily daunting at that age? It was just something you were just doing? Or were you a bit frightened by it, these guys, these legends that you were warming up for?
You know what? It was a blessing because this is how I learned to properly play an intro, to properly build up a night. I've learned the respect of playing before an international artist. Mm-hmm. And then I was very lucky enough to start working in a record distribution when I was 16, mm-hmm. 16, 17. And then from that point on, all of those international artists, they had a lot of respect for me because I played all the promos, and they were like, "What? Why do you have all those records?" And yeah, that was good times.
Yeah, and you know, even then, having, you know, back then when you're playing all off vinyl as well, if you've got those promos on vinyl, that's like the real cachet. Yeah.
No doubt. Look, it I don't know how to compare it, but it was a bit like the stock market, mm-hmm. you know, when, you know, getting records was like, if you have I don't know, it was so crazy, the run on those promos, the run on releases. I was 16 and I would order records in order to sell to record stores from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I learned so many different languages, and it really marked my future, you can say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I was going to say that must have been critical in your development as a DJ in terms of finding your own sound and your own passion for what you enjoyed, and having access to all of that, being able to really hone it from everything that you're being sent.
Yes, and I'm still struggling with that because finding my sound, because the mistake you don't want to do when you are touring artist and the producer is that you jump on hype trends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and every year you jump on a different genre because this is hype, and then you want to make the best out of it. I think you always need to have like a certain trademark in your sound. Mine, I would define it as always having a certain groove. Mm-hmm. But you also have to be careful when you build a certain fan base. You can't go left and right because you're gonna, you know, it's a bit of the fan base in our scene is a bit like a football club fan base, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, everybody's rooting for freaking this guy, and you like Ben Klopp, you can't like Black Coffee because this, you know, like insane kind of philosophies, which I don't share this kind of philosophy. But yeah, sometimes I like to play more techno stuff, then I like to play more organic rhythmic stuff, and so this is my dilemma, you know. but you know, like it's a constant evolution.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If I listen to music I released like 10, 12 years ago, why did I release this? But back then I wasn't into this kind of music. Now,
yeah, it's constantly evolving is the best way to put it, I think. Yeah, don't get yourself caught up in, okay, this is where I am and this is where I'm going to stay. And if you're listening to stuff that's 10 or 11 years old and you're kind of like, oh wow, I'm glad I've moved on from there, instead of listening back to it and saying, oh, I want to try and recapture that, you know, that's a good place to be, isn't it?
Look, it's the same like you look at a picture of you of yours 15 years ago and say, why did I dress like this, you know? So I would never again dress like this. Oh, my hair got horrible.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's like evolution.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to your time in Switzerland, obviously you're playing out, you've learned how to warm up, which is, you know, an incredibly hard job to do. And to do it well is, you know, it's the sign of a brilliant DJ, someone that can do that and, you know, mm-hmm. bring on mm-hmm. that night and, you know, be selfless in terms of making the headliner all comfortable and everything like that. I mean, during that period as well in Switzerland, there's quite a good batch of artists and producers that have all come out of there all of a similar time. I mean, were you playing around in clubs with these guys, and did you get a feeling that you were part of a movement at that time?
And there we go with a very interesting question and with an even more interesting answer, because I don't know if it's a cultural thing, mm-hmm. but in Switzerland, pretty much everybody minds his own business, mm-hmm. if I can be politically correct. So you really have to prove yourself by yourself, of course, like with local artists and with friends, you supported each other throughout the years. But those who came out, those who were lucky and you know, made the career out of it, they all, out of Switzerland, they all built their careers individually, mm-hmm. you know. So of course, after a few years, a lot of years, I was supported by Luciano, and he's also from Switzerland, and he was a very big career booster for me, because he put me basically on the map, mm-hmm. you know, for so many artists and promoters. But yeah, you know, if you like, people think like, oh, you're from Switzerland, such a small country, and who's from Switzerland? And when I list the artists from Switzerland, they freak out. Dietmar, Ripperton, Luciano, Adriatic, Jamie Jules. There's so many artists, you know. And we had a scene in Switzerland with a lot of national DJs, which were super big, like crazy big. Like trance DJs in the 90s were extremely big. And then year 2000 onwards, the house DJs became pretty big. And they all made a huge living out of it, because, you know, Switzerland is small. You will play like 3 gigs a night, like 5 gigs a week, 6 gigs a week. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So those guys were my inspiration back then. I didn't have like, you know, all of those big names. I wasn't like Juan Atkins or Derek May or Carl Craig or Carl Cox and Sven Vett fan. I was like, I loved a guy called Noise, mm-hmm. a guy called Gangsta, a guy called Max Ricardo, Danny Koenig, and those were like big legends in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. So we had, culturally speaking, musically speaking, we had a lot of role models, but we didn't have a strong bond.
Right, yeah.
You know, for example, when people always judge like, oh, the Swedish house mafia, EDM is shit, and EDM or commercial, but those guys in this world, like the EDM world, they support themselves like crazy. There is, of course, there is competition, but I mean, I know the guys from the Swedish House Mafia pretty well because I used to book them when they were basically, when they cost nothing. Mm-hmm. 15 years ago, I paid them like $1,000, you know, and they all played house music and quality house music and they became big because mm-hmm. they were united, mm-hmm. you know, and the Swedish artists helped themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we would have much more international touring DJs in Switzerland if that would be the case as well in Switzerland. Very long answer. I hope you didn't.
No, that's fine. That's the perfect answer. I mean, you know, you can't argue with the fact that there has been a lot of success come out of Switzerland as well. So, yeah, you know, who's to say it might have been even bigger if, you know, you were supporting each other in a different way. However, I think you kind of done all right without that by the looks of things, most of you. I mean, you know, you mentioned that, was there ever a sense of kind of playing it safe? Did you ever feel like, okay, well, I might be doing really well in Switzerland. I can get all of these gigs and I can just stay in this area and I can be really successful just within this market? Or was the ambition to be like, actually, this is great, but I want to take it to the next level? When was that point where you were like, okay, I want to go from Switzerland to Europe to the world?
Yeah, you have role models with when it comes to positive things, but you also have role models when it comes to negative things. Mm-hmm. So the guys in Switzerland were my role model because those guys were like pioneers for this kind of music in Switzerland, but they never got out of Switzerland. Mm. But they had huge potential. And I figure out I don't want to get old in Switzerland with my music, you know. I want to get old with my 9,000 cows in my village back in Switzerland, but I don't want to get old with my music in Switzerland because the world is big. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, so I figured out to get out of Switzerland, I have to start to produce my own kind of music and I have to connect with international artists and labels and promoters. And I have to start to make a name with my productions. And only then I would hopefully start collecting some gigs internationally.
Yeah, and when would you say that started to happen?
That was maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I started to to produce music with loops, you know, like very like super like big amateur style chopping. Loops from sample CDs and pretending to play chords and stuff like that, but you know, I've learned it the way everybody learns to produce, and since I had, you know, I every morning when I used to go to the distribution, you know, to the office, my day was basically like an A&R, mm-hmm. like listening to new promos and ordering a certain quantity, like. You know, you would call the big distributor and he would play you all the news through the phone and you would, you know, your ear would be so professionally trained that you could say, okay, I can sell 100 of those records or 500 or 1,000. So, yeah. So I pretty much got an ear for what could work mm-hmm. and what couldn't, you know, so that was also beneficial when it came to know the potential of your own productions and yeah. to who you can send it.
Yeah.
To which label?
And what kind of came first for you? Was it a case of you were playing out and you were playing your own productions and you were seeing kind of what damage that did to a dance floor? Or was it someone else playing one of your tracks and you were like, okay, this is a really cool moment in my life?
You know what? I have a very weird relationship with my music.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think my music is not finished. I always think it would need more. Mm-hmm. And I always think everybody else does more amazing music than I do. but then when I started to send music out to labels, I literally produced tracks because I thought this would fit on that label. Mm-hmm. Luciano is going to love this track on Cadenza. No, Luciano didn't love this track on Cadenza. You know, oh, this guy is going to love this one on his label. No. So this made me realize that everybody has a different ear. Mm-hmm. So, and I would send them music. I would think, okay, they will never sign that track. And that was actually the track they would freak out and say, wow, I love this. I'm going to sign it straight away. Don't send it to anyone and don't send it to any DJ and no label. I'm going to take it. So, I always wanted to hear the feedback first from an A&R label or from different DJs who play the track to have the confidence to play it myself and to promote it myself.
Yeah.
Always, still today. And it's so weird because I'm so manipulated because I, for example, I go to a club or a festival and someone plays one of my tracks, I go like, wow, this went off. Like, I have to start playing it again. You know? I didn't play, you know. Yeah, very weird.
Yeah.
Very weird.
That is weird. It's interesting.
But normally you should be the first one promoting your music to the fullest and literally play it everywhere, even if it doesn't fit. Don't care, you have to play it out, everybody has to listen to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've spoken obviously to a lot of DJs and producers on this podcast, and it's interesting the journey some people will go through with their tracks. Some people will be like, I'm not going to trust it until I've road tested it myself loads and loads on a dance floor. Or other people, I think Anya Schneider was like, especially in lockdown, she was like, she was just playing tracks to her husband in her flat in Berlin. Was just like, do you think this works? Yeah, let's go for it. And it's also interesting you say as well about it never being finished. We spoke to a few people as well that are like, because there's almost infinite choice with a studio and production wise now, and so many tracks you can lay into something, you know, when having that quality control or having that feeling of actually when's the time to actually put it to one side and get it out, it's a really hard decision to make, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and you know, I was fortunate enough to have one of my studios in the basement of our club at Nordstern in Basel. And, you know, we still book all the names you may know. And some of them, my closer friends, they would, you know, take time back then. And after the gig, coming down to the studio and listen to my music and, you know, and one thing which I still remember and which stayed with me and probably forever was like, I was a huge fan back then and still am. You know, I am still a big fan of him. It's Martin Buttrich.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, Martin, and we were in the studio and okay, Martin, my music sounds like shit. I want to sound like you. You're like, well, how did you do this? And why does it sound so fat? When I listen to your music on my speakers and when I play my tracks, they sound like, I don't know. And he was like, look, every chef has like his own sauce, like his own recipes, his own, you know, his own machines, his own. So you can never sound as fat as someone else, but you can sound as fat as yourself. So, you know, simple but effective advice.
Absolutely.
Don't be like someone else, like you can look up to other artists, but don't pretend to become as good as they are, or be like them. Ultimately, you are yourself, like you are you.
And be inspired by someone, but just take that inspiration to give yourself truth.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Right, you're in Ibiza right now. And you know, we talked just before we started recording that, you know, it's going to be your base for a bit. I want to talk about you know, you're an absolute legend on the island. But take like scaling that back. He's pulling a face. Scaling that back to when you first arrived in Ibiza, around about, was it 2004 time at Space? I mean, had you been? Had you been to Ibiza before then? Did it have any meaning to you or a reputation, or what were your feelings when you first arrived on the island?
Okay, so for me, Ibiza was the epicenter of the world. Like, was literally, Ibiza, you know, it's like, for me, it was like, it still is paradise. So, but I'm born and raised in Switzerland, but, you know, I'm Italian, but born and raised in Switzerland. So my Italian, the Italian part of myself is very proud. So I said to myself, I will never go to Ibiza before I have a gig. If I go to Ibiza, it's because I play in Ibiza. No matter if I play in the toilet of a restaurant or in a club, but I want to play. Like, you know, it was like a target, like one of my goals. And as well, I was super lucky to, you know, I organized a party in Switzerland called Embedded Space, which I played for in Switzerland. And the promoter was like, oh, the music was amazing and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to invite you to Ibiza. I didn't believe it, but he really did. So my first time I played in Ibiza was 2004 or 2005. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to expect. I just knew, okay, Ibiza is like every big DJ is playing there. Sun, fun, parties all over the places. Beach, day parties, night, after hours, like literally everything. I didn't know what to expect, but I remember it as it was this morning. Like, I landed in Ibiza, I was like, it was super hot. It was on a Sunday, and I played on Wednesday, and I couldn't sleep till Wednesday. And then Wednesday morning at 6, I woke up, and at 7, the party started at Space. And I played the... It's insane. I played the Space Terrace, which was the church. Mm-hmm. It was like the holy place on the island. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, to go from that to, it's kind of changed in that time, hasn't it? Obviously, Space is no more. I've seen things like Ushuaia and Hive come in, and these huge, huge spaces now, and something like Ants that obviously you're really closely associated with. How has that dynamic changed from something like the Space Terrace, which could sometimes be quite, you know, ramshackle, freewheeling, you know, anything goes, to something like Ants at Ushuaia, which is this huge pool party space that is almost purpose built for an outdoor day night party? How do you find the difference between the two?
You know, I consider myself old. I'm not. I'm just 40. No, but, you know, sometimes even myself, I tend to go like, oh, back in the days, everything was different. Everything was better. But that's just like a romantic perception of the past. I mean, the whole market, the whole industry changed dramatically. The whole crowd changed. You know, if in the 90s, people were on certain drugs, today they are on different drugs. If in the 90s they would go out and party for a week, today they go out and party once a month, two times a year, or whatever. If back in the days they were traveling from rave to rave, now they come to Ibiza and maybe they don't want to party for 48 hours, but maybe they want to, you know, they want to have their space at the table and they want to enjoy a party. And maybe after the party, they want to go and have dinner. They want to be able to eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, totally.
They don't want to get, they don't want to get hammered. Let's put it that way. And everything changed, you know, clubbing became so much cleaner, which means it's, you can still find parties and clubs, which, are crazy as it used to be, but electronic music, especially house, techno, and all the subgenres you want to mention, or this industry created for no reason, deep, progressive, whatever, afro, blah, 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 it became very mainstream. Mm. And you know, back when I started, and I told I want to be, I told people I want to become a DJ. They were like, "You freaking nuts! What DJ? What?" You know, and then what you can make a living out of it? Crazy, impossible. What? You earn more money than your dad. You're crazy. You're only 18. Impossible. What with DJing? But now, you know, even my parents know that DJs are like, I don't know, half of rock stars. Still not rock stars, but, you know, like some kind of.
Yeah.
And, oh, David Guetta, TV, you know, massive, massive hits in the radio and dominating the charts worldwide, everything is different. So, of course, you can't compare space back in the days with Ushuaia now. Mm. But what you can compare, what Ushuaia brought to the island is, if this island became a spot for, like back in the days, of course, it was a hippie island. Mm-hmm. And now it's a hype, a very hip, not a hippie island, but a hip island. There's not so much hippie vibe on the island, but, you know, a little bit, but not what it used to be. So they adapted to the current situation, and they said, how can I build a proper club where I can fit the philosophy of the island, which is partying under blue sky in the sun, keeping that vibe, but delivering the highest quality possible, where we want people to have an experience, not just a party, where we want to have people have to buy a drink, but the glasses have to be clean. People want to go to the toilet and the toilets are clean. Yeah. The toilets, if you know, I remember, I don't name, I don't want to name a club, but that was like fashion back then. You were thirsty in the toilet, you would take like a sip of water from tap water, and it was like salt water, just because they wanted you to buy a 10 euros bottle of water. This didn't exist. This, you know, Ushuaia didn't invent that kind of philosophy. This was on the island already when I came here like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, or, you know, 17, 18 years, 19 years ago. So I think Ushuaia just gave an experience to the party. Like El Raw gives an experience to a brand, and Anne's tries to have an identity and give an experience to people with a certain trademark, you know. Easy 10 is also not dancing on the sand like it used to be. Now you have a couple of thousand people there. It's not like you and 300 techno heads.
Yeah.
So it's you can't compare. You can't compare two worlds because it's two different eras.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
You can't compare Pelé and Maradona to the players we have now. You know, it's impossible. You know, Paul Gascoigne, it doesn't exist.
Absolutely. No, you've nailed it totally. And
planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know, just to look at something like ants in the context of like the modern clubbing experience, you know, there's pyrotechnics, there's all these things going on stage, and you as a DJ, you're trying to have to manage that as well, like totally live. Like, how much preparation do you put into a set that you know where something like pyrotechnics are going to be involved? Do you have a sense of what track you're going to play that's going to like unleash the cannons, or how does that kind of work from behind the decks?
You know, first of all, when we started ANDS 10 years ago, I left Cadenza, mm-hmm. and cause I wanted to grow, you know, I wanted to stand on my feet, and I wanted to have also to have a label, a brand, and being involved in the process of building a brand. And everybody told me, you're crazy. You're going to Shuaia. It's not going to work. What are you doing? You just ruined your career. It's never going to work. People are going to laugh at you and whatever. This is what made me realize that you really have to go for your gut feelings, for your goals. You know, can you dream about something? Go for it. Literally, sky is the limit. And you know, since I was there from the beginning, since I was the first DJ they booked, and you know, and I gave my musical a certain trademark to the brand as well, you know, certain direction musically speaking, you know. So the guy who does the pyro and all the lights and everything, he knows me and my music like he knows himself. So, you know, it's like it goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
So there is literally no preparation at all. If you go too mathematical on doing DJ sets, you're going to lose a certain momentum. First, maybe it can bore you quite easily and you don't appreciate like what's happening right now. You know, you play in front of 10,000 people, you're on the island of Ibiza, and you know, it's like, so you need some aha moments, some, you know, some epic moments, and you create those moments only if you go freestyle. If you prepare everything, everything is mathematical, it's not good. You're not going to have those moments, I think.
Yeah.
Like, talk to an EDM DJ which has like his music programmed on the light show and on the fireworks and everything, he would switch the experience with myself. And to be honest, I would switch his fee with my fee, you know, and that's the only thing I would switch, because you can create those moments only if you're not in a mathematical routine set by set. You know,
yeah.
A guy who tours with an EDM DJ and does the lights, he can tell you, okay, what is it? 1 a.m.? At 1 a.m. and 3 minutes, this is going to happen at 10 past, at half, at, you know.
Yeah, there's no excitement in that for you as a performer.
Yeah, of course, with the time, you know what's working at Ushuaia. You know, and if you think like, okay, I went a little bit too experimental, I have to catch the people again, you know exactly, okay, I'm gonna throw in this track, it's gonna be a lifesaver, and I'm not too proud of doing that from time to time, because it saved me a couple of times. you come back from a tour where you played only grooves and you played very deep, and then you want to do the same thing on a big stage like Ushuaia, and then you go like, after 15 minutes you go like, you know, you're not Ricardo Villalobos. People are not here 100% for you. People are here to have fun and give them some fun. So sometimes I throw in some all-time classics and they love it, and I give them a moment to go back where they come from and tell their friends, oh, and then he played Knights of the Jaguar and the place was freaking out and you know, and I do this because I want, you know, yeah, strings of life, they freak out. I have people telling me, oh, I was in Atushwaya 10, 9, 8 years ago and you played that track. It really changed my life. Exaggerated, but, you know, you touched a certain nerve.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, thinking about the people on the bill that you're playing with sometimes, you know, it can be a real breadth of talent. People like Richie Horton or Steve Lawler, you know, they play like different kind of styles. And obviously we've already talked about the kind of training you've given yourself in being able to warm up for big, huge stars. When you're playing now and you've got someone like Richie Horton on the bill, are you thinking about, I've got to change my style a bit to compensate for what he might deliver? Or are you like, I'm just going to go for my sound?
Oh, look, even I, there was times where I played big festivals in between of Richie Horton and Carl Cox.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I need to kill it or they both eat me for breakfast, you know, so I can't look left and right. And also for the crowd, they can't listen to Carl Cox destroying it. Then I come and then it's like flat and then Richie Horton comes and destroys the place again. So you also need to look a bit for yourself at a certain stage, yeah. You know. But I can tell you, if I invite artists to Switzerland, for example, now, you know, I come from a party I have played 2 days ago with Marcel Plex. And of course, we ended up playing back to back, but I'm in my hometown. We invite guests. So I give him the spot. And then we jump on the decks together, and then we have the spot together, and we kid it together. So, but there, if maybe, you know, I'm on the lineup with very, very big names, and I know 80% of the crowd came to see him, and maybe only 20% of the crowd came to see me. I can't go full house if I'm on the lineup with Richie Horton, for example.
Yeah,
I have to go more. But I'm a very diverse DJ, and I'm super proud of it. I mean, until maybe four or five years ago, I think I was the only DJ in the world who played Panorama Bar, which is considered as one of the most exotic underground clubs in the world,
mm-hmm.
and Ushuaia, which is the mainstream location in Ibiza.
Mm.
You know what I want to say? Like, there is no DJ who plays. You know what I mean? So it's being diverse. Of course, now I don't play Panorama Bar again because I'm, you know, they have also a certain philosophy where I play all over the world and they play a lot of underground clubs and then I play a lot of big commercial mainstream festivals. Yeah, I'm very diverse.
Yeah, and to have that balance, to maintain that credibility with that balance between underground and popularity as well, it's a very difficult line to straddle, and you're in that groove, I think. What's paying you back is where the places that you're playing. If you're playing at Panorama Bar or, you know, huge festivals, this is the thing that's good.
Look, our scene is that, like, we get judged a lot, and it's crazy how you can build a career by maybe let's say you play very bad 2 hours in a club and you post a video of 20 seconds of glory and people think like the guy is smashing it.
Mm.
Whoa, I saw a video of that place. Whoa, amazing. Okay. So only maybe 500 people in the club, they say like, okay, there was like a moment of 5 minutes. It was good, but 1 hour, 55 minutes was very bad. So people judge from what they see on social media. You can build careers out of it. And now there is like a thing of being like an entertainer also on social media. You have to be funny. You have to be this. You have to be this. You have to be this. And you can really create like a certain aura outside your profile.
Mm-hmm.
And people buy it. People, you know, people just buy it. And then you have you maybe get into a space where people judge you by only by the music, by the releases, by the production, by your entourage, mm-hmm. you know, by the DJs you're friends with, and then you play it cool, and people go like, okay, that guy is cool. And then you build a career out of coolness, or you're a guy who tries to diss everything and everybody, and this is shit, and this is bad, and this is not good, and this guy and EDM is bad, and this guy is commercial, and this guy is on, you know. So, and I honestly don't know where to fit. Mm-hmm. I don't like to be very funny on social media because I don't like to see myself on video. I don't like my voice. For example, when I hear the podcast, you know, when we were a little bit younger, we were looking at talk shows, mm-hmm. and you were ashamed because people were going to, you know, are on television talking about private things, and you know, you could like, oh, I have to watch something else because it's awkward. And I have this when I see my face on camera or I listen to my voice. So I can't be funny. I can't be very crazy on social media. So I have to do everything I do. I have to score with my music. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Yeah.
So I build my career out of that.
Yeah. Let your music do the talking.
That's why I might not be the hypest DJ on earth, but I know I can hold a certain level by delivering a certain quality and only giving my best when I go out and play clubs or festivals, with the philosophy of reading the moment, reading the crowd, reading the situation, knowing where you are and giving people what they might need in this specific moment, but also surprise them. That's a good formula. So this is how I survive in this industry.
That is great. It's good to have that kind of almost humble approach to it and not be like, I am this big ego, you know, I'm here. And at the end of the day, you are entertaining and you're wanting to give people a good time and you're taking note of that rather than being like, this is more about me than the crowd.
Because people are going to judge anyway. People are going to make their mind anyway. People, you know. People like pineapple on the pizza, and
I will judge you if you have pineapple on your pizza.
it's fine. Yeah, even me as an Italian, I don't judge. So if I don't judge an Italian, it's fine.
Cool, I'm kidding. Right, let's talk about your next project, or your new project, All I Need. Yeah, it's really multifaceted. You know, you're fist pumping right now. We're talking about it. I mean, it takes in a record label, you know, you've got an events wing, a fashion line coming in. I mean, take us through what the thinking is behind this. What's the ambition for it?
So the goal to have an own label goes way back, you know, own music label, like your record label, like literally your own label, no sending promos out or demos and hoping that someone is going to sign, you know. And then also I wanted to have a label because I'm going to shock people, because I'm going to go super melodic, I'm going to go techno, I'm going to go house, you know. We have you know, I have remixes on the label of Kevin Saunderson, which is my god, you know. Mm-hmm. Kevin Saunderson, D-Tron, you know, collaborations with some of my friends, with people I used to look up to, and you know, so it's something. Having a label, also coming from the distribution and record store background, it's almost like you would close a circle. Mm-hmm. But having a label too early in your career means, if you want to have a proper label, that you have to outsource it and give it to someone who handles it, mm-hmm. and that someone who handles it is never gonna give a certain touch you need for your own label than yourself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will go like, okay, I really need a label now. And then I was like, okay, no, you know, let's plan it properly. And I do it when the time is right. Mm-hmm. And throughout all those years, I met so many people working in fashion. I you know, I used to throw a lot of parties back in Switzerland. We have a club in Switzerland. I'm involved in an international brand like ANDS. So of course, having a brand which is not only a record label, but also has like a touring part in the project is going to be beneficial when, you know, you want to help younger talents on your label. You take them on tour. You do like maybe 20, 25, 30 shows a year. You can give them like 15 gigs, which is amazing, you know. And a little bit what Locodice did with Desolat. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tini, Martin, Livian Robbie, Guti, all of those guys came out of Desolat's world, and that was Dice. Mm-hmm. Luciano did the same with me with Cadenza. I mean, myself, Reboot, I should put myself as Reboot, Michel Kleiss, Mirko Loco, and all of the, and myself. you know, we toured because there was Luciano with Cadenza who gave a platform. So this is also something I've learned, and I wanna be able to do in the future. And fashion, I can honestly tell you, fashion is an idea. I dress very regular, and you know, I don't want to look like in a restaurant, like, okay, that guy is way too underdressed. I like fashion, and I wanted to create something which a fashion line where I can travel all day and then jump out of the flight and from the airport going straight on stage and I look good. You know, I can travel with it, I look good. I can go straight to the meeting, I can go straight to the stage, I can, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was like the idea behind.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of, like I said, I have a lot of friends who are designers for very big brands and people work in the fashion industry, and they came up and, you know, said like, why you don't do collaborations with brands? We can do something with this brand. And then I said like, why we just don't do our own brand? Mm-hmm. So we have a collaboration with designers and buyers and sellers for our fashion line. And, you know, we have a partner distributor for our label and a partner for our event section. So yeah, that's basically all I need.
Awesome. I mean, that's incredible. And yeah, I can't wait to see what, you know, the immediate future holds. What's the most exciting thing on the horizon for this next? Is it an event or a fashion line or any releases you're particularly interested in talking about?
Yes. What excites me most is, you know, I've learned something from a marketing perspective. You know, we had, we were joking around, messing around with words, how we can, you know, ends and music is the answer. I used to play that Celeda, music is the answer, a cappella all the time. I made it a bit of a ANDS trademark track. So you know, music is the answer and blah, blah blah. So with All I Need, I didn't even think of a marketing campaign. But now you have to go, like, you can communicate with the fundamentals you have. The fundamentals I have and we have in All I Need is we want to share the need of music, the need of partying, the need of dressing the way we, you know, we like, and it's basically, you know, it's also a statement. And after being locked up at home for like 2 years, all we need is really hugging each other again, and consuming music and going out to parties, and, you know. So I think it's the right time to launch that brand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm excited to see it. And yeah, it's great that we've got you just before, you know, the cusp of it being all coming out. Great. Yeah, you look genuinely thrilled and excited to be getting this off the ground.
I am.
Excellent. And, you know, you mentioned as well, we have all technically been locked up almost for 2 years now. You know, what are your thoughts on how the scene's going to kind of adapt post COVID, you know, do you think that, you know, we kind of touched on it as well earlier about Ibiza and, you know, a kind of culture of, you know, it being very expensive.
Way too expensive.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, don't worry. And, you know, do you think that because of what's happened with COVID, you know, people have got maybe less money or restrictions on traveling, you know, do you think there will be a reduction in prices in somewhere like Ibiza and or there'll be more smaller underground parties? Or do you think this trend will continue just upwards, bigger, better, more expensive type parties?
You know what? I think humans are not like animals because animals, they don't forget. It's crazy. Like, they as literally, if they would say now the pandemic is over tomorrow, everybody forgot about it, and everybody forgets about how important it is to support certain people, certain industries, certain situations. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's gonna be super hard for like younger DJs who were just right about to putting their feet into the whole thing, you know. It's gonna be as hard as it sounds, you know, and I'm not a pessimistic person at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to see positive things in everything, but I think people are gonna forget very easy and everything is gonna be the same. We are gonna be in a total mess. You know, but because it's true, because if the pioneers in our industry, and I'm talking about the biggest DJs, the biggest promoters, the biggest club owners, media, and so on, if they don't sit all together and figure out how to make our world, our industry, mm-hmm. better than before, nothing is going to change. We're going to book the same DJs over and over again. Like I also did that brand and I have like, I produced like 60 tracks. My girlfriend hated me. I was never at home in the studio or somewhere else. Like, you know, I sacrificed a lot, but I want to give promoters a reason why they should book me again. I want to give a reason to my agent to focus on myself, you know. So I think there's going to be a lot of people are going to think they're going to wake up from a nightmare and they step in the next nightmare because they were not at all productive, zero productive, and they think, okay, I'm going to be booked again 20 gigs a month. But the industry is like this. They're going to book only people who sell tickets, and that's the biggest ones. And we know who the biggest ones are. So I think this put us back like 10, 15 years back. Mm-hmm. And all the big guys, they really should wake up and really invest in the future. I'm not the future. You know, I'm maybe here for the next 10 years, but the future of our scene are the younger generation. So you should start booking emerging talents.
Yeah.
I can talk to you about this for the next 10 hours. Crazy. I just hope that, you know, it's not going to be a reset. Mm. Reset of what? Because promoters are going to play it safe. Who's selling tickets? I'm going to book that guy. I don't care what you liked handmade pasta before, and you sold handmade pasta, and now you have to sell like fast food, very cheap fast food, and people are going to buy it, and I survive. Okay, I'm going to sell cheap fast food. I'm sorry to depress you. I'm so sorry to depress you. But, you know,
You're right. That's what's mildly depressing about it. Yeah, you are right.
You know, I want to see things very realistic. I don't know, like, it's almost like the biggest clubs need to help the smallest clubs, because who's going to survive in a city? Only the biggest club.
Yeah. You're so right.
Like small emerging clubs, small niche clubs. Mm-hmm. There has to be a way to get along together, but also support each other. It's going to be the key word in the future.
Perfect. Yeah. And, you know, for you setting up your own label and that facility and that platform for to develop that emerging talent and give them the opportunity to be able to get things out there is, you know, what other agencies and clubs and things should be looking at. It's interesting as well that you say, I think there's a real good point about bigger clubs maybe having smaller niche club brands that could feed through to.
Very good idea. Of course. I mean, if you program like 3-4 nights a week, one night a week should be for local DJs, supporting local DJs. Ibiza, I mean, you know, someone who listens to this podcast can say, yeah, but he's talking like this, he's privileged and he plays the biggest club, biggest crowds and blah, 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 blah. And it's easy for him to say that. I mean, I worked my ass off. I went to dinners with other DJs. They didn't know me and they thought I would be the driver. I was like, no, I'm just the guy who plays like the first slot, you know, like, okay, I had to go through things, you know, and to much worse things than sitting on a table with other DJs and they would think like you're the driver. But I mean, and there's nothing wrong with being a driver, but just to say like, from an ego perspective of every human being, you know, you're a DJ like them as well. Mm-hmm. And then you pick me up at 11 and you go like, what? You pick me up at 11 and I'm like, man, but I'm not the driver. Like I, you know, are you the friend of the promoter? No, I'm DJ. I DJ. Oh, what's your name? And they're never here, you know. But I've now like, what I wanted to say is, it's easy for me to say that, but in Ibiza, there is no local. I mean, Ibiza has a lot of local DJs. Mm. They don't play any important clubs.
Yeah.
You know, local DJs used to be a very big part of the game back in the days, mm-hmm. like Bass Residence, Tanya Vulcana, DC10, you know, all the Spanish residents, DJ Oliver at Space, and then, you know, mm-hmm. but now they have to start from zero again.
Yeah.
From scratch.
Well, let's hope for the future. Let's hope someone's listening to this and they'll know. Fingers crossed. I mean, yeah, we've been talking for over an hour now. So it's fantastic. We've got this opportunity to really chat and really dig into your career. We always have one last question, which we always wrap up on. And that is, we are House Culture. And you are part of the scene and, you know, an indelible part of Ibiza, you know, played all over the world. What has the culture of the scene brought to you in your life? And, you know, how has it affected you? And where do you think you would be if this wasn't in your world?
Everything, literally everything. Like, this made me, you know, this, like, everything. It made me stronger. It made me, you know, I mean, you have to be... You know, you go through so many up and downs in your career that it can make you or break you. You have to be mentally fit. You know, I was looking at everybody like drinking from the bottle, selling that rock star life image. But I was like, at one point, damn, that's totally not me. Like, I can't handle all of this. Like, so I'm doing sport. You know, it opened my eyes. Like, you know, ego is a big thing. Like, you know, of course you wanna, you know, I used to go to clubs, listen to the DJ and criticize everything and saying, why is he like, and literally creating a kind of hate towards the guy who was playing just because I wasn't there. And I thought, oh, I deserve it as well. Oh, I'm better. Very bad mix. Oof, this track doesn't fit here. Oh, damn, he's mixing melody to melody. What a shame. You know, like, so I can do this much better. But look, behind every artist, there is a struggle. And behind every artist, there is work. And if you see someone standing on that stage, it's because he deserved it. Mm. And this kind of philosophy, you can adapt to your daily life. You know what I mean? How many times I would go home and I wouldn't listen to my mom, my parents. I was on the phone all the time. Oh, I'm busy. Oh, I have like 30 shows this month. Oh, I play every day. Oh, I'm so tired. And then I was like, nah, you're not the center of the world and you're freaking nobody. So what are you complaining exactly? You know, you learn so much. Mm-hmm. You can adapt, you know, in your social life, in your private life. That's why I'm seeing all of this pretty relaxed, you know, playing in front of people were like, oh, wow, you played like, I don't know, 20,000 people. Oh, and you go, yeah. I mean, if I don't do it, someone else does it. Maybe someone else did it even better than me. So I'm just thankful and I appreciate every second I can be in the house culture world. And I try to make the best out of it and enjoy it.
That's the main thing. That's a brilliant place to end up on. Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's where we'll end, I think. So thank you so much.
It was a pleasure. Nice one. That was a good one. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
House culture.
Yes, that was certainly a good one, wasn't it? I really enjoyed chatting to Andrea and I hope you enjoyed listening to that. I must say a huge thanks to him and his team for getting us some time within his busy schedule. Wasn't it hilarious to hear how his mum used to have to give him a curfew when he was practicing behind the decks with his older mates? How times have changed. I thought there was also some great advice in there about finding your own sound and staying true to your own tastes in order to build a successful reputation. I hope some of you were taking notes. The new All I Need project that Andrea was so excited to talk about has recently launched with its debut single from the man himself. The track is called Final String and more than lives up to its name with its orchestral swells and emotional journey. I love it and cannot wait to hear it on a dance floor somewhere soon. And whilst we're talking about new beats to discover, the regular listeners amongst you might have noticed that we didn't get a chance to discuss Andrea's five track choices for our ever-growing House Culture Perfect playlist that you can find on Spotify. This epically eclectic selection of tunes has taken submissions from every single one of our previous podcast guests, and Andrea did not want to miss out. So, for his Catalyst, a track that originally got him into the scene, is of course the one with the message that we all know and love, Eddie Amador's enduring pian to the club, House Music. Andrea's choice for his floor filler sees the don that is Marco Carolla make his first appearance on the playlist with his rumbling track Bloody Cash. For some pure Shoreside vibes, Andrea has gone with the stunning James Holden mix of Nathan Fake's The Sky Was Pink. A tearjerker that always fills Mr. Oliva with emotion is the timeless Finally by Kings of Tomorrow. And finally, to finish us off, the crowd are asking for one more. What does he play as his last tune? He mentioned it in our chat. It is, of course, the outstanding Knights of the Jaguar by Underground Resistance's DJ Rolando. So if you want to immerse yourself in all of those stellar choices, plus a few others from our House Culture podcast family, search on Spotify for House Culture Perfect Playlist, stick it on shuffle, and turn it up loud. Now, with that as your soundtrack, please help support this podcast by loving, liking, tweeting, sharing, and rating or reviewing us on Apple. We've had some fantastic feedback already. So if you say something good, it will not only help us to continue to create these episodes that you love listening to, it could also get you a shout out on a future episode. This time around, I'm pleased to shout out to Rachel Beasley, who got in touch with me on Instagram to say that she found my knowledge and experience within the scene inspiring, and that I also give a good interview, apparently. Well, Rachel, I don't really know what to say about that, other than a sincere thank you. It does put a smile on my face knowing that other listeners enjoy my passion for club culture and that you come away from each episode with a little bit more knowledge about the personalities that are shaping the scene for us happy punters. And if you want to join some of those other party goers from wherever you might be in the world right now, please hit up our Instagram feed at HouseCultureNet or follow the hashtag TrueHouseCulture. Not only will you be kept fully informed about the podcast, you'll also get connected with other beat lovers from across the globe. And finally, if you want to get in touch with me, Matt Rouse, you can do it directly on Instagram at DJ Matt Rouse. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and see you next time.
House Culture.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.